I'm Nathan Cones here with your look at the midday news from Western Iowa's information leader, KCIM, for Friday, April 3rd, 2026. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd announced earlier this week that the state has filed a lawsuit against Change Healthcare over a massive data breach that exposed the sensitive information of nearly 2.2 million of Iowans. According to the lawsuit, the breach began February 11th of 2024 and went undetected for 10 days while a hacker accessed the company's systems. During that time, the attacker allegedly created administrator accounts, installed malware, and stole data, including social security numbers, driver's license numbers, health insurance information, medical records, and billing details. When Change Healthcare discovered the breach on February 21st, it shut down its systems, triggering widespread disruptions across Iowa's healthcare network. Providers were forced to continue treating patients without receiving insurance claim payments, while others incurred costs switching to new claims processors. Some patients also experienced delays receiving medications and treatments. The lawsuit filed under Iowa's Consumer Fraud Act and Personal Information Security Breach Protection Act also alleges the company delayed notification to affected residents for 5 months. The suit argues Change Healthcare security was knowingly flawed, and Byrd believes the company should be held liable for damages. She cites outdated IT systems, inadequate responses following the breach, notification delays, operational disruptions, and general harm to Iowans in the filing. Byrd calls the breach a preventable debacle and said the state is seeking stronger data security measures, financial penalties, and damages. According to the American Hospital Association, an estimated 94% of hospitals in the country saw some level of impact from that data breach. Housing availability remains an oft-cited hurdle to economic development for many rural Iowa communities, including Carroll, but city officials generally have few tools in their toolbox to encourage new housing construction. Carroll City Manager Aaron Koiker says one of their options, and the most commonly utilized, is tax increment financing districts, also known as urban renewal areas.
Unless we can get the state involved, the city itself only has urban renewal or just a flat-out cash development grant. But typically, when you're talking about even a grant, you're like, well, we're going to use the urban renewal area to get the dollars or to get our dollars back. You know, we'll give you this, but we're going to use your tax dollars to pay us back.
Simply put, TIF districts freeze valuations in a specific area, and the city invests in the district either through infrastructure installation, development incentives, or some other similar mechanism. For a set period of time, the city collects 100% of the tax revenue from the increment, which is any increase in valuation over the freeze. Those revenues are then used to reimburse the city for its initial investment. Quaker says housing TIF districts have an added caveat that a certain percentage of those revenues, 42% in Carroll's case, go to a designated low to moderate income housing fund. Quaker says some projects may take decades before the city recoups its investment, but governments don't operate on the same timescales as people.
When we do an investment, are we looking at a return on investment to make it a business decision of 10 years, right? Or do we make the ROI based on, okay, now I have a certain number of properties that are now paying taxes for the rest of my life, basically. Yes, we are tying up property tax dollars for a certain amount of time, but that doesn't mean it's the end all be all as far as the decision-making process.
Koiker adds every project is different, as location, site conditions, infrastructure requirements, and contractor needs all play a significant role in how the figures play out. In the end, the council does have the final say on any development and whether it's worthwhile for the city to support it. Koiker says the economic development environment has changed significantly in recent years, and local government involvement is functionally a necessity for a project to move forward.
So big picture, cities need to be involved in housing development to broaden the tax base. And what that means is if you have more people paying property taxes, that means you have a less burden on the individual taxpayer. Quite frankly, some people forget that. I mean, in the end, the analogy is very easy. When's the best time to plant a tree? Do I plant it now for 20 years from now? Or do I plant it 20 years ago so then I can appreciate the shade? Well, I can't do anything about 20 years ago. I can do what I can do now so that I can make this place a better place in 20 years. And so that's kind of that's the long range thinking when we do economic development. The other side of economic development is because of COVID and all those price changes that we've had over the last number of years, it's very difficult for developers to come and make ends meet. So in order to help them, most cities across the state are putting in the infrastructure for those developments.
So for Carroll's latest housing development, Gulf View, the city is proposing the city invest $1.25 million for roads, water, and sewer mains, as well as a lift station. The city will recoup $750,000 from the sale of the land to the developer, Kirkhoff's Craftsman, and the remaining $500,000 will be repaid from the TIF revenues generated by the $7.75 million in property values added to the tax base. The proposed TIF district will last for 15 years once implemented. The public hearing for that proposed development, by the way, is scheduled for the council's April 27th meeting. Volunteers across Iowa are making regular trips outdoors after dark to participate in the state's annual frog and toad survey, which began April 1st. The long-running community science effort, overseen by the Iowa DNR, has collected amphibian population data for more than 35 years. Since the standardized survey began in 1991, more than 600 volunteers have monitored 2,371 sites in 96 of Iowa's 99 counties. Participants have made more than 45,000 visits during 7,146 survey nights. DNR wildlife biologist Stephanie Shepard says the survey would not be possible without an army of volunteers over the years. Recent data shows that bullfrogs, green frogs, and cricket frog populations have slightly increased in recent years, while American toads, eastern gray tree frogs, and spring peepers have declined somewhat. Chorus frogs, American toads, cricket frogs, and eastern gray tree frogs do remain the most commonly recorded species. So volunteers conduct nighttime listening surveys at roadside stops along designated routes three times between April and July, recording the frog and toad calls they hear to help track species distribution and population trends. The Frog and Toad Survey is just one of the many community-led data collection initiatives hosted by the DNR. Others include nest monitoring programs, the Bumblebee Atlas, and the Bat Survey, to name just a few. Learn more about these volunteer opportunities and how to help at iowadnr.gov. We are going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. More news after this on KCIM.
Summer fill equals winter chill handled. When you take advantage of New Cooperative's propane summer fill program, you'll be ready when the winter returns, your tanks will be full, and you'll be comfy and warm when it's time to heat your home. Summer fill propane, going on now through May 31st. To learn more or order your summer fill propane, call New Cooperative or go to newcoop.com/propane today. New Cooperative, your winter peace of mind and cozy winter night propane partner.
Before the sun's up, you're already moving. Checking cattle, loading feed, watching the weather like it's your job, because it is. You need a truck that works just as hard as you do. Hi, this is Sean Yost at Champion Ford and Carroll. The Ford F-Series, built for days like yours, powerful, dependable, and ready for whatever the land throws at you. Stop in and find the truck that's ready to go to work. Champion Ford, driven by your kind of hard work.
Welcome back to KCIM's Midday News. I'm Nathan Cones reporting. The Carroll Community School District Board of Education held its work session out at the new transportation facility last night as they toured the building and hearing updates within the department, plus much more on last night's agenda. The meeting opened with the board member approving of three employee retirement incentives, including two teachers and one administrative staff. The members then heard from Transportation Director Jennifer Dittlinger on staffing routes, and they took a tour of that new facility, which became operational earlier this school year. Additional information was provided on a three-year-old preschool program, at least the potential of it, including estimated expenses for the district to run one, and the next steps they also looked at regarding the district's wide facility plan and an update to the budget reduction goal. Initially, the district and school officials have been trying to cut about $150,000 from its expenses and are having a tough time getting to that mark. The meeting did wrap up with a closed session for an agreement regarding a specific student. Of course, no details will be released from that. Carroll Broadcast will bring you more from the CCSD work session and upcoming newscasts. The Greene County Development Corporation is inviting the public to an open house today for the Jeffersonian. That's the former middle school building that was transformed into apartments. The renovation project kicked off in June of 2025 and created 25 new apartment units in the school building that was built in the 1920s. Anyone interested is welcome to the self-guided tour through the new updated living units anytime between 4:30 and 6:30 p.m. today. Attendees are asked to enter through the east doors along South Vine Street. Those with questions can contact Chris or Tracy Deal by emailing 203wharrison@gmail.com. Again, the Jeffersonian Open House will be today, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at 203 West Harrison Street in Jefferson. Administrators at the Glen Ralston Community School District are proposing an approximately $1.12 increase to the fiscal year 2027 tax rate due to voter-approved physical plant and equipment levies and the district's early retirement program. So back in March of 2025, during a special election, voters approved of the district to implement a $1.34 per $1,000 of taxable assessed valuation for the new physical plant and equipment levy. That PEPL will generate about $2.2 million over the next 10 years, which will finance debt that the district incurred for its facility updates. The district is also offering a retirement incentive, which will help reduce personnel expenditures. The retirement incentive is paid out of the management fund, which is levying $127,000 total. For FY27, the district is proposing a rate of 11.01810 per $1,000 of taxable assessed valuation. That's an approximately 11% increase from the $9.90 seen in FY26. The public hearing on that, by the way, coming up next Thursday, April 9th at 4:30 p.m. in the conference room at the school for district residents to voice any of their questions or concerns. The Audubon Public Library has released its lineup for the Summer Music in the Park program. Nearly every Thursday, beginning in June through August 6th, a free concert will be held at Audubon City Park for all to come enjoy. Kicking off the series on June 4th will be the Weary Ramblers. That's an award-winning duo featuring Chad Elliott and Kathleen Severing Fox. Chad Elliott, of course, a Jefferson native. Living just down the road. The next concert will be with Brad Morgan, another native, and then the T-Bone Committee will be providing a meal for that. The Polka Police, Third Wish Acoustic, Looking for Luke, and Girls Next Door will continue their performances on June 8th, June 15th, July 2nd, and July 9th, respectively. The following week is the Audubon County Fair, and there won't be a concert that week, but then three concerts remain after that for the rest of the free concert series, with Brick Immerman on July 23rd, Blake Kirchhoff on July 30th, with the Knights of Columbus preparing food that night, and the final concert of the year will be August 6th, with 95%. In case of any rain or weather-related conflicts, the concerts will be moved to the Rose Theater on Broadway Street, so that's kind of a standing order there. Any business or organization interested in sponsoring one of those concerts or providing food for the open-air events can contact the library at 712-563-3301. Library staff do wish to thank Community Insurance and Gary and Linda Keller for sponsoring some of the events, and they welcome all to come out and enjoy the summer with the Audubon Library's Music in the Park series. And that is going to be wrapping up your KCIM Midday News for Friday, April 3rd, 2026. I'm Nathan Cohns reporting. Have a great weekend, everyone.